session number 23196, Reel 5.
Mr. Wilkinson, Reel 5. After you'd pulled back, what happened next? Had you got the reinforcements arrived?
Yes, reinforcements arrived. And then we was ordered to go over to the American sector to relieve the 5th Corps positions. I can't tell you the name of the place. It was countryside, but I just imagine it's somewhere in the region of Comont. I think it was 4 miles west of Comont. 4 miles west of Comont, that's right. It was a very quiet sector. American troops were still there as we was being relieved. There was no shell fire, it was very quiet. It was more like a picnic in the country. The Germans was frying up on the roadside. And the next morning, and the date now, let's think, it's 23rd of July, 23rd of July, I believe, around that area period, the 5th Corps, we relieved the 5th Corps to cover the 1st Army's breakout from St. Lo. And that was to protect their flank, the 1st Army's flank, and the 5th Corps attacked on our right. That means I was going down into the heartland and covering the 1st Army's breakthrough down to Avranches.
That was the 26th of July.
25th. Yes, St. Lo. They attacked the next morning, which woke up the artillery on our sector, and they started mortaring. We suffered a few casualties, not many. We were only there for about 3 or 4 days. We came out for a rest for 48 hours. From there we got more reinforcements. I was by that time posted back to the signallers because they had the casualties in Wheel 113. So I was in the signal platoon.
So you're back with headquarters company?
Yes.
Were you pleased or...?
Yes, I was actually. But I knew I wouldn't be there long. From there we went into the front line at Comont itself. The front line was just about half a mile in front of Comont. It was very quiet, very quiet. There had been fighting there, but it was very quiet. Now, the big attack went in on Sunday the 30th of July.
But by
the 30th Corps, which we were part of. The 30th of July, I think they put the barrels down about 7 o'clock in the morning. And it broke through. And went southwards, bypassed a big forest called the Bois du Homme, which is about 3 miles south of Comont. And us being in the signal platoon, we was not in the front but behind. We followed up on the next day. Seemed an awful long time in a scout car because they crawl. We got to this place outside.
Tell me about the scout car. What sort of scout car?
Well, a scout car is a long signal van. And it's got all the Morse equipment in there, wireless sets and everything else. It's sort of HQ, you might say, the signals. It's mobile.
And what type of car was that? What type of scout car? What was the make, do you
know? I don't know the make of it. It was a long one. And it had all the wireless sets in there and the Morse code equipment. That was the sort of headquarters because the signalers used to lay cables from there. We got to just about near the place called Bois du Homme. And a load of reinforcements came from the 59th Division, which was broken up to reinforce other divisions. We got a load of people from the 59th Division.
Now, how did the reinforce? You've had a lot of reinforcements,
yes,
by then. How did these reinforcements settle in? You know, they weren't necessarily Scottish. I mean, no, they were.
Well, they were because they probably landed on D-Day, 59th Division, and. After a while, there's so many casualties, they broke the 59th up. So they'd already had some frontline experience.
Well, what I mean is, how did they fit in with you, you know, because well, you were a Scottish unit?
They all fitted in quite well, because, I mean, really, Scottish division, there was more Englishmen than there were Scotsmen. You know, and you had Irish in it as well, you had all sorts. But you had the nucleus, like the CO and all them, they were Scottish, you know, or the opposites. We had some Scottish chaps, but later on it was anybody they could scrape up.
So it got less and less Scottish?
Yes, yes. From there, I was posted back to B Company as they got reinforcement signallers. As I told you, I was bad on procedure, so they wouldn't keep me in there long. I went back to B Company, and there was a major and a Captain King, Captain King, and the Major, what's his name now? Major Henson. He used to be the company commander of support company, but they posted him because of casualties to B Company. And I found the chaps dug in just outside the Bois du Homme. That was the 31st of July. Whether they gave them an ultimatum to pack in, I don't know, but they evidently didn't. And dinner time on the 31st, that, oh no, 31st they dug in. 1st of August is what they're calling the King's Own Scottish Borderers, or some regiments, the Battle of Minden. Now, in England, we used to wear a rose in your helmet or your forage cap. And some bright spark thought of putting roses in our steel helmets because it was Minden Day. Now, whoever done it, I don't know, but it was absolutely ridiculous. You was picked up a mile away. Anyway, the attack went in on the 1st of August, just about 2 o'clock. I was being a company runner at that time.
What did that entail? What did you have to do as...
A company runner goes around telling the platoon commanders the orders from the company commander. You have to go to them and say in their position, sir, company commander wants you, you know, for briefing or whatever. And naturally, I was with the company headquarters, which is a little way in, not the forward line, but not, let's say, the top of this garden, back. And they put the barrels down. As they came up, machine gun opened up and all the whole lines went down like skittles. We all dived to ground, and then there was two big bangs. Somebody had forward had thrown two grenades into the machine gun nest, and then from on then it was pandemonium. There was Germans mixed up with us, and nobody knew where anybody was.
And this was the attack on the Bois du Homme.
Bois du Homme. Yeah.
B-O-I-S.
Yeah. B-O-I-S. D-E-H-O-M-M-E. And then there was a right melee. I sat, laid down by the side of a corporal from A Company, and I could see a lot of Germans, which was the only time I really saw them at fighting close quarters. They was in a section, the sergeant leading, trailing their arms, and whether they were going to give in, I don't know, but anyway, this corporal fired. And as he fired, there was a big shot, and his helmet was hit, and he went shot through the head. And it must have passed me, and he went down, and then everybody scrambled all over the place. It was a right pandemonium. Then our own artillery started shelling us, and it was a right mix-up. And anyway, they took the pocket. Casualties went back, and then it settled down quiet after that. And we stayed in the line there, in the Bois du Homme, until the next morning. We came out of the pocket, which was no longer there, onto the main road. Had a breakfast at the roadside, which was tin stuff, and used to make tea and petrol, a biscuit tin full of earth, and put petrol in and brew up tea. From there we marched down the road towards the Beni Bocage. And it was about, I suppose, 4 miles southward, and followed the retreating enemy, and then from then onwards we went into the 1st Welsh Guards positions for the night. The next morning, I suppose about 2nd of August, we climbed up what they called a height. I can't remember the name of the height, but it was very high, all trees, and we dug in on the top, and the Germans was about a mile away, and we changed positions within 2 hours onto another ridge. Another ridge, and as they retreated, and they retreated back to what they call the Estuary Ridge, which is nearly 8 or 9 miles south of the original front line. Nibeni Bakaj had been liberated by some other unit.
So what was the name of the ridge again?
Estri. E-S-T-R-Y. Estri Ridge. There, they made a stand, the Germans. Everyone had tried to take it. So they said, it's our turn. So we counterattacked on the 4th of August. Red hot day, red hot weather. 12 o'clock barrage. They see no counter fire till we got to the front line. And a 12 company was digging in. They was the back company, we was the forward with the captain. There was a 4 bursts of multiple mortars from the Germans, and the whole lot got almost decimated in the, behind us. The captain says to come on, we're going to have a look, and what I saw was terrible. Blokes absolutely blown smithereens. One private got up and said, come on lads, and took charge. So they made him up to corporal. He took charge, took the remnants to different positions, and we was there till August the 12th.
So what was that attack on Estri Ridge, that attack was a failure, was it?
No, we took Estri. After that it was fluid. Somebody else advanced across your front, and then the shelling sort of got quieter and quieter. And on the 13th, we abandoned the positions and went back to a rest area, meaning that somebody had come across our front. And we went in the rest area. We was there 2 nights. And from there, we went by motor transport all the way back to Billersbocage, which they took almost after D-Day and lost it again. From Billersbocage, you went to the Caen Canal. From the Caen Canal, we went to Surrey Harcourt, following the retreat, because other units was all over the place. From Surrey Harcourt, that'll be about August the 17th, Surrey Harcourt. From Surrey Harcourt, we went up to Falaise, down the Falaise Road, and went through the pocket. And there was devastation everywhere. Horses, cattle, gun nimbers, everything was smashed to pieces. By that time they closed the pocket. We circled the pocket and went down to a place called the Rains, a rest area. The CO came along and says the enemy's in full retreat. Then nothing must stop us. He said, if you just any machine gun nest, you've got to carry on. It's all right, I know. And then he came back 10 minutes later and says, the enemy is in a rout. So from then on, it was chase, all the way, some route marching, MT, transport, mixed, crowd down to the River Seine, the place called Louviers. At Louviers, I was called upon to go on 48 hours leave to the Normandy coast in a rest area. A special rest area, you know, where you got a cookhouse and you had a tent and a nice bed for 48 hours.
What was that like?
Very nice after all that. Very nice. And made it into a sort of a holiday camp, you know. You had games, you had food was good, and they gave you extra cigarettes, and you had a little show. It was only 48 hours. From there, they took us back to Louviers, but by that time the battalion had crossed the Seine on the other side, and we'd been in a farmhouse for about 3 days. The FFI was in existence there, and they said there were Germans in a big wood, and the FFI went in with us to clear
FFI
the
FFI is
the French Free French insurgents. They cooperated with us to clear the wood, but there was nothing in there. From there we went to all from place to place, from place
what
to place.
What sort of reception did you get from the French civilians as you went through? You know, did they make a fuss of you or what?
Much better, yeah, much better, yeah.
What would they do?
Well, they gave you milk if you wanted some milk, or, you know, or we often gave them bars of chocolate and, you know, for the children, like, you know. They're a bit different from the ones in the earlier, you know, because that's West. From there we went from place to place, never really went through a town at all, only villages, until we got to a big town. I imagine it must have been either Lille or Arras. But I remember the Menin Gate, and I remember the trucks going through and everyone's cheering through the town. It was the only town we ever went through.
That sounds like Ypres in Belgium.
Yes. And I see the trams running, and I said, well, goodness me, they're the trams that used to run along Prime Barnet Road. They're the modern trams, you know, we used to go out the front door. And they were a different colour. But they'd already bought them, I suppose. And I could see the tram drivers all stopped in the street. And everyone was cheering, and some were saluting all the civilians. And then we went over a series of canals into the Belgian frontier, across the Belgian frontier, to a place called Courtrai in Belgium. We was in Courtrai for about 2 nights. Then we went along the Ypres Road until we got to a place called Zoust. By the name of that, you can tell you was getting into Flanders, the Flemish part of Belgium. We was in Zoust for 2 nights. We had a regimental dance band play for us in the local theatre.
What did that like?
It was all right. It was all ex-musicians, you know. And then I said to one of the Lance Corporals, I said, oh, are we going into Holland? He said, oh, no. He said, they're making a stand on the Albert Canal. So we went from there to a place called Zempst. Z-E-M-P-S-T. From there we had canal training.
What was that? What training did you do?
Going across the canals in ducks or boats for crossing canals.
In ducks?
Ducks, yeah. They're like a...
D-U-K-W.
Yeah, like a big punt, you might say, and you've got so many in the punt. Paddle across the make-believe crossing training. From there we got the orders to go close up to the Albert Canal, and that's when we got back to the front again. When we got to the Albert Canal, the 50th Northumberland Division was on the east bank, dug in. We took over their positions. There was mortar fire, shell fire, nothing as heavy as in Normandy, but sporadic. And then we was firing into a town called Gill, or a small town called Gill. The next day we advanced, the Germans retreated from the Albert Canal and fought back to the Escort Canal. And Gill was in between the two. We was in Gill 1 night, and the next night we moved up to the banks of the Gill, the Escort Canal. There the Germans had made a line, fortified line. Everything was quiet, let them live, let live. And then we had what we call a diversionary attack. It was a time when they was going to get ready for Market Garden. And that was on our right. So we were called diversionary. We attacked over the Escort Canal. There was only 3 battalions, a brigade. It was very small. The Royal Scots crossed it in the dinner time, and as soon as they crossed, the fire was intense. There was shelling and machine gun fire, very heavy. And then they said, right, we've got to cross tonight. And we went down to the banks, and they was firing tracer up the canal both ways. And they were shelling this bank, shelling the other bank, and we crossed on what they call a half a bridge on the rope. So you got on one half and they pulled you across, and as you're being pulled across, they would ping, ping, back both ways. When we got to the other side, they plastered that east bank, and we was, you know, we hadn't dug in or anything, and we all dashed down to the cellar where one officer was saving a shave and the biscuits in. And he said, what are you chaps doing down here? Get out of my headquarters. We got back on the road, we dug in, and we was there for about 5 days.
So when would that attack have been across the Escaut?
That was the place called the Dual Bridgehead, they called it. I can't remember the name of the place, but it was a large village.
And when would the attack be?
It would be a diversionary.
When?
That was about 12th of September till about the 17th. And we were there, and the artillery, German artillery school was at Turnhout, which is at the back. So they was all good marksmen, and they used all the artillery there to fire on our little tiny bridgehead. And you had a big clock on the West Bank. And what was left of that clock when we pulled out was just the rods. But they never hit the clock. The clock was stuck on the top. And all we could see was the rods where they shot away the... Because it was a lookout post. And that's what they'd done it for. But they used to fire a shot into that clock. And as soon as they fired that shot, they'd crump, 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 crump all around you. Then we got orders to pull out, pull back. By that time, the parachutists had come down in the Market Garden. And we saw them coming down at a place called Sun. That's over to our left. We pulled out. When we pulled out, we found we got new NCOs to replace the ones that had gone.
You were still a runner, mainly?
No, I wasn't. I was put back to the infantry by then, B Company. By the way, I told you that was Estrie. The captain got killed. We dug in on a ditch. And he said, "Runner!" And I was so worn out, running about all day in the heat, that one of them said, "Lee's quite sleeping, so let him sleep." And one he said, "Right, you on the end there." And he went with him, and they ran into a machine gun nest. And the boy got wounded, and he got killed. So that was another captain we had after that, and another major.
That was Captain King that was killed.
Captain King, yeah. Major Henson got wounded. So after that, we had another officer. His name? Major Tinniswood. He actually stood the ground right the way through after that. And another captain, his name there. And I know his name, he was a captain, because when we came out, he said, "Your mess tins are dirty." And they said, "Well, sir, how can we clean mess tins in the front line?" One of those sort of officers.
What did you think of the officers generally, you know, Keane and Tinniswood and...
I don't know really, you never saw much of them, you know. They used to be in their little position, you know, with the sergeant major. You never really saw them until you come out for a rest, you know, because your position might be up 500 yards away, and they're right probably back here, and then you've got the forward companies right out, and then you've got the inner companies, and then you've got the HQ. So that they never really went up to the front. If you went into attack, they used to be there, but they was never right in the front. They was always about 500 yards behind.
Even the second lieutenants?
Yeah. Yeah, they was always behind. It's all the sections and the platoons that went forward. You might find a platoon commander, he's a second lieutenant. He might stay with the platoon. But the company commander, he's about 500, 600 yards back. Anyway, as I say, we came out for a rest of new NCOs. From there we went to a place called through the ridgehead that they broke through, which was at Beeringen. We advanced up the one road that went up to Ireland. I think it was a pretty foolhardy attack really, but still we advanced up the road and we went into to Eindhoven. From Eindhoven we went to a place called Falkensworth. We was there one night. And then we was carried on up the road, and then so everybody out on the roadside. And from there on, you went back in the front line, off the road. The Germans was dug in on the left, in a place called Best, near over the some canal. And they were fanatical lot. They were Goering's airborne, which he used for. They were very, very, vicious sort of people. We dug in Best, and there was a lot of sniping going around as well, you know. And somebody crossed the front, and we went into a house, and the corridor was cut, and we had no food for 5 days. But we feasted ourselves off all the tinned fruit that was in some of the houses. That's all we lived on.
What was the sniping like? What was it like being under sniper fire?
Not very nice. I'll give you an instance. When we got up to close up to Best, it was almost dark, and there was a shot rang out, and one chap was shot through the stomach in the dark. We dug in, the next morning the sniper was over there and he started firing, and then one of the officer came along, threw a smoke grenade and said, "Everybody out." They all got out except me. I was stuck in the trench, and I didn't put my head above, and Sergeant sent one chap up to me, And he said, the sergeant wants you. And I shouted a warning to him. I said, take cover. And he wouldn't take no notice of me. He just stood there and he just went, pong, and they just shot him. I waited a little while, and then their artillery started up, and I thought to myself, well, I'll make a run for it. And I was always taught in the army never to run in a straight line. I run zigzag. Not permanent, sometimes left, sometimes right, 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 left, so he couldn't zero in. And he took a pot at us, and he missed. And it went through, pinged through the house opposite, and I got in the ditch and went back to the sergeant. And I said, I'm sorry, what's the name? Just like that, you know, no mention. And it was there for about 2 days, and then we took up further positions further along a place called St. Odden Road. We dug in there, and it was a lot of mortaring, shelling, and whatnot.
What was it like when you dug in? Can you just describe the sort of slit trenches you'd dig?
Yeah, they was easier to dig there because it was sandy soil. You could get down much quicker. You'd hear the thump overhead on top of you, you know.
What would you use to dig in?
If you went into attack, you had an entrenching tool on your back. It's only a little tiny thing, you have a little pick on it. But if it was, sometimes they brought up shovels. And of course, when they brought up shovels, you got digging quicker. And of course, like being Normandy, it was hard to dig. You needed a pick. Whereas in Belgium and Holland, the ground was sandy. So therefore, you got down very quickly.
And how far down would you go?
You go down as far as there.
About 4 foot.
Say up to where you got your elbows, so you can got a line of fire. But deep enough to conduct when shell comes.
And how
out.
Wide?
Not by, but only much about that wide.
Couple of feet. And how long?
About 6 foot.
Would it be a one man trench or a
two? You get one sit one end, one sit the other. And later on, as I said, you've got an old door or something off a wrecked house, and you put one door over each end, and you put earth on top and grass, covered it round with grass, and you've had some protection from air bursts or the weather.
Now, what about your food? We haven't talked about that. What are you on compo rations?
You were still on compo, but when you did come out for a rest, you got fresh meat and fresh vegetables, and you got bread. That was after Normandy. You got fresh food up for a time till you went somewhere big.
What were the compo rations like?
Well, there was a tin of. For breakfast, you have a tin of sausages, which I now found out was soya. You got one of those each, a packet of biscuits and a little dab of margarine, a cup of compo tea. For the evening, you had either meat and veg, pork and veg, steak kidney pudding, or pork and veg. For afters, you had marmalade pudding, chocolate pudding, which you had to ration, you had so many to a tin. And then you get tea. Midday you got nothing. You had to make do with your biscuits and a bit of butter or a bit of jam that was in the tin. As I said, when we got to Best, we went St. Odden Road. There we were relieved by the 51st Highland Division. They pulled up from. This was about October. It was October the 1st.